So this evening's talk will follow a little bit on the class we had yesterday morning, the Sutta study. I know just a couple of you were there. And what I did was put copies of the Sutta on the table. So please help yourself to a copy to the Suttas after the class. One of the things that we talk about right from the beginning is developing an awareness of our resolve, of our intention, why we're here, why we practice the Dharma, why we're interested in practicing the Dharma, why we're making the effort to practice, to come to classes, to learn about the teachings, to practice. We talk about this usually in the first beginner's class. Why are you here? Why are you here? It's really important. Oftentimes when we're new, we have a kind of a good sense of why we're here. We're coming with a really specific purpose. Oftentimes, as our practice moves on, we tend to forget why we're here. And really, as our practice develops, we want our intention to deepen, to strengthen. If we're practicing skillfully, it should deepen and strengthen over time. We have to just keep asking ourselves and keep reminding ourselves, why are we here? Why are you here tonight? Why do you practice? The Buddha's teachings would suggest that we practice the Dharma out of love and compassion. This is the intention that we bring, that we practice out of love and compassion. Compassion for ourselves because there's suffering in our lives. All of us have suffering in our lives. All of us have suffering in our lives, the suffering that's rooted in desire and aversion. The suffering of liking and disliking, wanting and not wanting, being separated from that which we want, not being separated from that which we'd like to be separated from. We've all got this suffering, we all experience it. So we come to this practice out of compassion for ourselves so that we can alleviate our suffering. And we come to this practice, we practice, skillful intention for the practice is intention informed by love. Love being the action that we take in support of our wish to be happy. We all have a wish to be happy. We all have a wish to be free from suffering. We all have a wish to be happy. This is why we connect to our wish to be happy when we do metta. It's one of the ways that we can really support our capacity to move forward in our practice if we remind ourselves that we want to be happy. We all have this wish to be happy, and our intention, when it's informed by loving kindness, is the intention to take action, to practice in support of our wish to be happy so that we can fulfill our wish to be happy. Which always leads us to the question, what's happiness? So we can kind of keep things really simple and think of there being two kinds of happiness. Okay, two kinds of happiness. And we could call these two kinds of happiness the happiness of the world and the Buddha's happiness. And they're really two very, very distinct kinds of happiness. So when we talk about the happiness of the world, this was the happiness that when the Buddha looked out at the world and when he looked at himself, the way he was living, he said, well, this is the kind of happiness that most people sought after. There was a particular way that the world or most beings in the world sought happiness. And he saw that in himself, looking for happiness in sense pleasure. So if it's the sense pleasure of food or entertainment, technology, all the different forms that we indulge in, or if it's looking for happiness in gain, so money, possessions, material things, if it's looking for happiness in status, these are the ways that the Buddha saw we tend to look for happiness. This is the happiness of the world, the path the world follows, the Dhamma of the world. Looking for happiness in sense pleasure, gain, status. We look for happiness in status and being regarded highly, if it's in our work, if it's socially, if it's in any different area of our lives. And then the fourth area where we look for happiness is in praise. We seek out praise as a way of being happy. So these are the ways of the world, the ways that the world looks for happiness: sense, pleasure, gain, status, and praise. So, you know, it's important to ask the question, you know, how do we look for happiness? What are you doing? I mean, you know, it's a good question. You know, it's a good question. It's something I think that's probably worth considering. You know, we think about a lot of things. It's probably worth taking a little bit of time, and that's why we take a little bit of time on Sunday night every once in a while to ask, what am I doing in order to find happiness in my life? I mean, that's why we're here. What are we doing in order to find happiness in our lives? You know, are we following the ways of the world? I mean, we follow the ways of the world because those are the ways of the world. So we just go along blindly with the ways of the world because that's what everybody else is doing. We never really stop to question. First to question, well, what am I doing? How am I finding happiness? And we're just doing it. We don't even realize that we're doing it. Am I looking for happiness and sense pleasure? Well, we all are to some extent. To what extent, maybe, is the question. To what extent am I looking for happiness and sense pleasure, in gain, in material things, in status, and in praise? Do we seek this happiness? How much effort are we putting into finding happiness in sense pleasure, gain, status, and praise? I mean, these are important questions to ask if you have the desire to be happy, which ostensibly is why we're here. You know, you could be coming here to find a way to not suffer while you're trying to find happiness in sense pleasure and gain and status. I mean, that's kind of what we do, right? That's kind of what we do. It's like, I still want to look for happiness in sense, pleasure, gain, status, and praise, and I'm going to practice so I can do that and not suffer. So how much effort do we put into looking for happiness in the ways of the world? So this is something to pay attention to. I mean, you know, we're going to all look for happiness to some extent in these things. The question is, to how much extent? How much of a priority is it for us? And one way that you can begin to start to understand that is look at your thinking. I mean, we don't just look at our thinking in the service of bringing the attention back to the breath. We don't notice thinking just so that we can see that we're thinking and come back to the breath. I mean, part of the time we do that. But at certain points, you know, we need to take a look at what we're thinking about. You know, are you thinking about sense pleasure? You know, are you thinking about gain, all the things that you want? Are you thinking about status? Are you thinking about praise? It's really important to look at what you're thinking about. When you spend most of the day thinking, it's probably a good idea to start to pay a little bit of attention to what you're thinking about, because what you think about is going to dictate how you live. With our thoughts, we make the world. So, you know, are we thinking about sense, pleasure, gain, status, and praise? Are we seeking after? Are we looking for happiness in these things? And what are the results of that? You know, what are the results of that? Is it leading to happiness? Is it leading to happiness for us? The more sense, pleasure, the more gain, the more status, the more praise, does that mean we're happier? When we acquire a sense of pleasure, do we experience happiness? Well, maybe for a moment or so. What about after that moment or so passes? What about after the sense of pleasure passes? I mean, these are things that we have to ask. When we get something new, moment of pleasure, then we're looking for something else. There's pain in acquiring and having to reacquire in the service of finding happiness. So is this true? I mean, this is what the teachings would suggest. And again, you know, are we practicing in the Dharma in an effort to find happiness in the ways of the world without suffering? You know? sort of like, do you want your cake and eat it too? No pun intended, although it's sort of a good analogy, right? Is there a way that I can find happiness and sense pleasure, gain status and praise, and not suffer? Well, that's a fair question. I mean, that's a fair question. Try. You know, we don't say don't try. If we find out that we can't live in a way in which we're following the ways of the world, in a way in which we're looking for happiness and sense pleasure and gain and status without suffering, you know, without the process of looking for happiness in those things being inherently unsatisfactory and flawed and inherently imbued with suffering because those things are impermanent and can't bring a lasting happiness, are we willing to settle for that flawed happiness? What we sometimes call a temporary happiness. Maybe we are. Maybe we're willing to settle for that. Maybe we're willing to settle for a lesser happiness. Now, the Buddha's happiness is different. I mean, the Buddha had that happiness that came from the ways of the world. He had all those things. He had all the sense pleasures you could possibly imagine. He had all the possessions. He had the status. He had all the praise. He felt it wasn't cracked up to what it was. He felt it didn't, you know, it wasn't, didn't really meet the requirements of a true, lasting happiness. So he was looking for a greater happiness. And he found what he found was what he thought was a greater happiness. The Buddha's happiness is said to be a greater happiness. We have to see that for ourselves. The Buddha didn't talk much about that happiness, partly because it transcended what could be described using language. We can think of it as a happiness that's transcendent. Transcendent happiness. It transcends, just like it transcends being able to be described with language, it transcends any kind of conditioned experience. Okay, it transcends conditioned experience. It transcends, you know, sense experience, form, you know, the words we hear when we achieve status. It transcends conditioned experience. So he didn't describe it much. He often described it sort of using subtraction. One of the ways that he described it in talking to some of the monks, he said, just as if there were a roofed house. So, you know, that's that conditioned experience. Just as if there were a roofed house or a roofed hall having windows on the north, the south, or the west. When the sun rises and a ray has entered by way of the window, where does it land? The monks answer, on the western wall. And the Buddha says, if there is no western wall, where does it land? On the ground. And if there is no ground, where does it land? On the water. And if there is no water, where does it land? It does not land. And so it's a happiness that, you know, transcends conditioned experience. Transcends form. Sometimes it's called consciousness without feature. So you could think about it as a form of consciousness, but, you know, it's not a form of consciousness like eye consciousness, nose consciousness, ear consciousness, body consciousness, mind consciousness, taste consciousness. It's a consciousness that doesn't land on anything. The Buddha described it as consciousness without feature, without end, luminous all around. Here water, earth, fire, and wind have no footing. Here long and short, coarse and fine, fair and foul, name and form are all brought to an end. So water, earth, fire, and wind, the elements that make up the physical world, don't apply. Consciousness without feature. And because it's not a conditioned experience, it's said to be deathless. It's always there. It doesn't rise, change, and pass. It's always there. Now, it's important to understand, and you can only understand this by experiencing it, it's important to understand that this happiness is something that we can experience. You know, we can experience it, we can know it, we can know this experience, we can connect to it. We can, you know, and we have to use our senses, although it transcends the senses, we can know this experience the same way we know the rain. We put down our umbrella and we know the rain, but it's not a conditioned experience. You know, we can know this experience and know it conclusively. You know, I mean, it's the happiness inside. Sometimes we call it the happiness of the heart. But make no mistake about it, it's something that you can know. And it's something that we're asked to know. You have to know this. This is, you know, part of what the Buddha asks that we do in searching for happiness. And this is the third noble truth. Know this happiness. Experience this happiness. You know, it's said to be a sublime happiness, a greater happiness. And sometimes the word, of course, that we use is nibbana, you know, which is the Pali way of saying nirvana. You know, it's like we don't like to say that word. I mean, and of course, it has a lot of, you know, misconceptions or cultural, you know, implications. Another way that, you know, the word nibbana also means like the extinguishing of a flame, you know, the fire of suffering and the extinguishing of that. So we can know that extinguishing. We can experience that extinguishing. So do you have some faith in that? Or does this sound like pie in the sky, just kind of fun to hear about perhaps? Or does it feel like doesn't really pertain to me? You know, do you have faith in this happiness? In this happiness? I mean, this is the ultimate meaning of faith in the Buddha's teaching. This is the ultimate meaning of faith. Do you have faith in the Buddha's awakening? Do you have faith in what the Buddha experienced in terms of true happiness? Do you have faith in that? Do you know that it's a real thing? Do you know that it's something that you can experience? Something that you can experience. That it's real. If not, can you have the intention to know it? To learn to know it? Again, this is what we're asked to do. I mean, you just have to start off with some blind faith that, well, maybe there is this greater happiness, because in order to move towards it, you have to have some faith that's blind, but ultimately, faith is verified. I mean, you develop faith in the Buddha's happiness because you've experienced it. And you're not going to be able to move forward on the path if you don't experience it. Why would you make this extraordinary effort to find a greater happiness if you don't have faith that there is such a thing? I mean, you know, after a while, you know, that's what happens to us in practice. You know, we stop practicing because we don't really have faith in the Buddha's awakening because we haven't experienced it. So we find this happiness, the Buddha's happiness, by training the mind. We find this happiness by training the mind. This is how it's done. We don't find the Buddha's happiness under a rock somewhere, you know, or in Central Park, or, you know, it's not something that we can acquire. You know, it's something that's already there, but we just can't see it because of the way our minds are clouded by our desire and aversion. It's not something that you can get, like sense pleasure. It's not something, it's not, you know, you don't get it by, we talk about getting and being. It's not something you can get. It's not something that you experience by being somebody. I mean, this is culturally, the way that we look for happiness. Now, the world's happiness, this flawed happiness, is clearly, I mean, the Buddha talked about this, you know, it's an easier happiness to attain. You know, you can go home tonight and open the refrigerator, take out the ice cream, and experience the happiness of sense pleasure. You know, you can get on the computer and do a little online shopping and experience the happiness of gain. You can acknowledge yourself in some way that denotes your status. You know, we can all find some way to do that, right? You know, I'm a meditator. You know, I'm a New Yorker. You know, whatever it is, right? We can all, you know. And if you fish enough, you know, for compliments, you'll get some praise, you know? So, you know, I mean, these things are easy to get. These things are easy to get. Training the mind, not so easy. Not so easy. But it can be done. So this is how we know the Buddha's happiness, by training the mind, by developing parami, skillful qualities such as generosity and ethical conduct and renunciation, by developing concentration, by establishing concentration in breath meditation, by maintaining it throughout the course of our day in all postures. I mean, this is what the Buddha taught. And by putting that concentration to good use, first by practicing discernment, you know, by practicing heedfulness, paying attention to our actions from that place of tranquility and equanimity that we develop in concentration, paying attention to our actions, seeing whether our actions are skillful or unskillful, abandoning unskillful actions. This is how we begin to train the mind, to uncloud the mind, to polish the mind so that we can see, so that we can know. It's the only way you're going to know. It's the only way you're going to see. So you have to purify the mind and clean the mind. So we have to look at our actions, physical, verbal, and, of course, very importantly, our mental actions, our thinking. You know, we've been talking a lot about this. And we're never going to know the Buddha's happiness until we can begin to abandon unskillful thinking, thinking imbued with desire and aversion. Once we can begin to abandon unskillful actions, then we can really deepen into our practice. We can develop deeper states of concentration. We can begin to practice for longer periods and go on retreats and let go of the roots of our unskillfulness. You know, begin to see into our desire and aversion, to begin to understand it, to begin to see the pain in it, begin to become disenchanted with it, and to not hold on. You know, and really it's a subtraction practice. Once we do that, you know, we just have to be sensitive to the happiness that's right there. A greater happiness. So this is the path. You know, we know the Buddha's happiness by training the mind. And of course, you know, as I've already alluded to, the more you begin to know the Buddha's happiness, the more you're going to train the mind. The more effort you're going to make to train the mind. Because when you know the Buddha's happiness, when you know this greater happiness, you know that it's the greatest happiness there is. You know that it far exceeds the happiness that comes from ascribing to the ways of the world. And this is where practice becomes committed. You know, we begin to give priority to training the mind. You know, this is something that we have to do if we want to know the Buddha's happiness. If you want to know happiness, true happiness. You know, I'm saying the Buddha's happiness instead of just happiness, because I want to make this distinction between the happiness of the world and the happiness of the path. It requires that we give priority to training the mind. It doesn't mean that all you have to do is train the mind, you know? I mean, even if you're a monk, you're going to do things other than training the mind. You know? You don't need to be a monk, but you need to put priority on training the mind. And, you know, and the way that works is, you know, if right now your 98 priority is on finding happiness in the ways of the world, and 2% is on training the mind in the service of being able to know the Buddha's happiness, you know, see if you can make it 97 and 3. You know, and if that starts to seem to work, make it 96-4. And make it 95. I mean, that's the only way that it works. You can't say, I'm going to make it 50-50 tomorrow. It doesn't work that way. Percentage by percentage by percentage. This is what we talked about last week, right? To a large extent. So can we make the training of the mind more of a priority? Can we begin to make a greater commitment to training the mind? And again, commitment is something that is going to develop little by slowly over time, but it has to develop. We have to little by slowly make more and more commitment to training the mind. And it requires a great effort. It requires great effort to train the mind. Most of you know that. You've been practicing. You know, there's a lot of difficulty that you're going to experience along the way. The Buddha said, you know, a lot of the journey, you know, will be met with tears. You have to be willing to be in it for the long haul. It's not a short answer. You have to be willing to make sacrifices, to give some things up. You know, if you're willing to do these things, you'll know a greater happiness. I have no question about it. And not only will you know a greater happiness, you'll also help to make the world a better place, a place in which there's more happiness.